Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course, that's the name football, of the show. The other name is off topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got in my heart to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches, and Kiss can grin the bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Esty, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you love this podcast too.
All right, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Connection podcast, week 4. It's already week 4.
Times are flying by.
It's flying by. MWCConnection.com is our website. I cannot promise no echo or echoiness this time, but I'll do my best. Jeremy Moss here, Matt Kennerly hanging out in Fresno. Facebook, Mountain West Connection. MWC Connection is on Twitter. And if you notice some more Twittering, it's because somebody discovered TweetDeck.
Yes.
How has your life changed with TweetDeck now?
I mean, it's kind of nice that I have more than one platform to handle, like, the 5 different Twitter accounts I'm in charge of.
What were you using before, just Twitter.com?
I was mostly just leaning on... Well, I mean, yeah, I was using Twitter.com for, like, my personal one, mm-hmm. which, you know, for those who follow me for Fresno State stuff know that I do that. But I was using my phone for that and all the other ones that I'm in charge of for school and stuff like that.
So what do you use for your phone? Does it have multiple accounts?
Oh, yeah.
What app do you use?
I use the normal Twitter one.
So you can access multiple accounts on the one?
I don't know if there's an upper limit for how many accounts you can handle at once, but I have 5 connected to my phone.
I may need to look into the... what type of phone? Is it the... you have iPhone, Android...
I have a Galaxy Note 5.
Ooh, I used to have a Galaxy Note. I'm up to the Galaxy 7 just a few months ago.
Fancy.
They're nice. I like the Note. I got giant hands. I'm a big guy at 6'4", and it looks great. You know what the funny... Not to go off topic, but I will anyways. I had a Note 3 a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And for my other job, I cover BYU and stuff. And I went to practices all the time a few years ago when I was doing the daily thing at the practices. Just one coach... Garrett 2J, he's now at the Virginia offensive line coach. I'm 6'4 and like 240, and so I'm not a small guy, obviously. He towers over me. So whenever if we did interviews and he called into our radio station, just use my phone. It looks like a normal phone in this guy's massive, massive hands using a freaking Galaxy Note.
Huh. And
so it's kind of weird. It's like, really? It's like that? But I don't know, but I may try that. I use Plume. Used Plume for a while because I didn't know the Twitter... The official Twitter app. That's correct, right? You use that one?
Yes.
I will have to take a look and see because my Plume app has been sluggish and slow and annoying lately. So maybe I'll give that a try. If anybody has any Twitter app recommendations that can do multiple accounts, put them in the comments. If you're feeling fancy, leave us a review on iTunes and just mention the Twitter app you use.
There you go.
Begging for reviews. So, so we got week 4. You know, it's also a interesting time for this time of year. So it's early September. I love college football, as you can tell. If we're doing this, there's a reason why. You know what? If I wasn't doing this, you know what I'd probably be doing?
Sleeping.
Well, not sleeping, but just in general. Like, I watch so much television, it's terrible.
Well, that's because there's so much good television out there.
Well, there is. Like, I love The Blacklist. I haven't seen last season. It's stuck in my DVR right now.
You got to get on that, man.
I know. Same with I need to, like, me and my wife watch it, but it's like I have that on there. I have like season 2 of Fargo sitting there. Manhattan, which I heard is a pretty good show. Haven't seen that yet, but saved up on there. I've also like, do you ever watch? I finally catch up on Mr. Robot. Do you watch that?
I have seen the first season. Yes.
I just started season 2. It's how do you? What do you think of it?
I have not watched season 2 yet because I do not have an actual cable box.
No, I mean season 1.
Oh, well, season 1 is excellent.
Excellent.
Okay. And this may be dated by the time it comes out, but the Emmys were the other night, and yep. Rami Malek definitely deserving.
Good job. Season 2, I'm like two episodes in. It's really weird. As was season 1, right?
Yes.
And then one last show before we get to football. It's she also won the Emmy the other day for Orphan Black. Do you watch that
Tatiana
show?
Tatiana Maslany.
I need to watch like season 3 and 4, I think.
Yeah. There's a lot of, long story short, there's a lot of good TV out there.
There is. Those are some good ones. And so even though like not many, you would think about like watching Mad Men on Twitter that everybody watches it. Not really, but you should. All right, football. That's enough of that stuff. I will probably stay up late watching more Mr. Robot tonight, but we'll see. All right, football. We have an interesting week. We start Friday night with more Mac-tion. Is this ever going to end, the Mac versus Mountain West?
We got to get to conference play sometime.
You would think so. We got a big one this weekend, but first game is Friday night. Wyoming Cowboys at Eastern Michigan. It's almost is it almost time to do the bowling puns? What was our game limit? Was it 4 wins we needed?
3 wins.
So I would like to say this would be a good time for a good win, but you remember what happened last year?
They lost.
Not only lost, it wasn't like a 2-touchdown loss, I believe.
It was 42-29.
Oh, jeez. Eastern Michigan, really quick, they're both 2-1. Wyoming's 2-1. Eastern Michigan's 2-1. This is in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Good old, sorry, Matt, CBS Sports Network, I should say. I'm sorry. Maybe not good old, but that's where it's at on CBS Sports Network. So Wyoming is a team, obviously, surprising or surpassing expectations by quite a bit with that Northern Illinois win. And then whatever, Nebraska, that happens. But this game right now, do you know what the line is on this game?
Not off the top of my head.
We should play the line. I'll have my lines post up eventually, probably up by this. Didn't happen Sunday night, but do you want to take a guess?
I'm going to say Eastern Michigan by 6.
Ooh, you're off by 9 points. Wyoming minus 3.
Interesting.
I don't recall the last time Wyoming was not just a favorite, but a road favorite.
That is an interesting thing. I mean, you would think that at first glance, this would be a very favorable matchup for Wyoming because, after all, they did beat Northern Illinois, although as the weeks progressed, it seems like the Huskies are having a little bit of a down year thus far. But, you know, Eastern Michigan, like you said, they did beat Wyoming last year, and this year, at least within the first few weeks, they've actually shown some signs of life, which you can't always say in a given season out there in the MAC.
No Ron Prince anymore?
No Ron Prince. You know, but what they do have is they have a quarterback who's done a pretty decent job so far in Todd Porter. He's completed, you know, 63% of his passes. He's got 6 touchdowns, 743 yards. He's been pretty good as far as, and for, you know, the standards that Eastern Michigan's had for like the last, 20, 30 years. This is a program that has known the depths of despair. And they have a guy who's played pretty well overall. Last week against Charlotte, he had his best game where he completed over 75% of his passes, had, you know, a little over 9 yards pass. And so he's a guy that I think could make some plays. What really works out in Wyoming's favor, though, is that I think that their run defense leaves something to be desired. On the surface, it may not look like it. You know, they're only giving up 3.2 yards per carry on the ground. But if you dig a little further into some of the stats, I don't know how familiar our listeners out there are with Bill Connolly's success rate.
It should be.
So if you're not familiar with it, I'll just run it down real quick. Basically, what success rate is anytime a team gets 50% of yards on first down, 70% of yards on second down, and 100% of yards on third and fourth down. And if you look at their run defense through that lens, right now they're 113th in the country in rushing success rate on defense. And that's the kind of thing where if you are Brian Hill and the rest of this Wyoming running game,
boom, run it.
That could make for a very nice evening for him.
Also, what you should look at, yes, they're 2-1, but they beat one of the not a great or probably very poor FCS team in Mississippi Valley State.
Yes.
Got smoked by Missouri, 61-21. And Charlotte, who they beat last week, they're probably the worst FBS team possibly out there. One of the worst.
That's awesome. Yeah, so,
it's good for Eastern Michigan, but the competition, they're 2-1. That's good for them. That's about as positive I'll get for this team.
Yeah, and I mean, this is one of those things where, you know, kind of like we talked about last week going into Fresno State's Toledo matchup where, you know, the stats may not tell the whole story because of the kind of competition they've faced so far. This is where we're going to get the real test of how good Eastern Michigan's run defense is. But I think that, you know, Wyoming's shown that to be a real strength of theirs on offense. The other thing to keep in mind is, you know, are they going to be able to take care of the football? Because they weren't able to against, you know, Nebraska a couple weeks ago, and that really betrayed them in their, you know, upset bid. But they rebounded very nicely against UC Davis and ended up in +1 in the turnover column. You know, when they've been able to take care of the football, they've won both of those games so far when they finished, you know, +1 in the turnover margin. So that's something to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, right now they're a -1 per game, -3 overall. One thing, too, to mention, because I know Wyoming has some decent guys in secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Porter, he can throw pretty well. They have they spread the ball around pretty well. They have five guys with 6 or more catches. Five guys have more than one touchdown, or at least one receiving touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen the secondary been pretty bad for Wyoming, except for Andrew Wingard there. That could be an area where Eastern Michigan could make some noise, just because I'm still not buying Wyoming's secondary overall to be that much improved as of yet.
Yeah. So, I would agree with that.
But I kind of think Wyoming's getting over the hump a little bit.
They might be, especially if they...
Would you believe it's 16.5 points for Minnesota?
That actually sounds about right to me.
That's a lot of points.
I mean, it is, but at the same time, you know, in our recap show a couple days ago, we talked about how, yeah, it looks like Colorado State finally has the quarterback situation sorted out, right? But there's a big difference between Northern Colorado and Minnesota.
Very big.
You know, because if you look at, you know, first of all, compare Colorado State's quarterback situation, for instance, with Minnesota's, right? You know, they've got a guy, Mitch Leidner, who's been talked about in certain circles as a potential first-round draft pick in next year's NFL draft. And, you know, he's had a little bit of a shaky start so far. He hasn't turned the ball over at all. He's completed a little bit under 60% of his passes. But, you know, as a whole, they may not be the most explosive offense thus far, but, you know, they should have enough weapons on offense to really test this Colorado State defense. And they've got, you know, one guy, Drew Olatarski, who's caught 80% of his passes so far. He's averaging 15 yards a catch just about. And, you know, if they can stay on schedule against this Rams defense, I think that's going to put them at a serious advantage.
It could. And also, I'm kind of noticing about Minnesota, this isn't the same team they played last year, or who San Jose State played last year, where it was a lot of option running the ball all that much. They're passing a bit more. Percentage with Leidner could be better, 58%. No interceptions, which is good. They also have only played 2 games. But the running game could get a boost because looks like Shannon Brooks, who broke his foot, could return this week. He led the team in rushing last year as a freshman with 709. Yeah, 709 yards, 6 yards per attempt, and 7 TDs. They got plenty of running backs because of what they do with the option attack a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The head coach, or was it Tracy Clay, said may be back. May not. They don't want to risk it, so we will see. I don't know. That could be another boost to the offense that's already pretty solid running the ground. So if Shannon plays, that could be a pretty big deal. Because they already have, like, Roddy Smith, 200 yards on the year. Colby McCray, 180 yards on the year. McCray's averaging nearly 10 yards an attempt. So if they get that, if they get them back, get Shannon back, that's a pretty big deal for this offense.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, Colin Hill is going to have I wouldn't necessarily he needs to play the game of his life against Minnesota, but he's going to have to play well enough to keep them in the game. Like, for instance, he in his kind of brief stretch in the UTSA game, he came in. It wasn't the best situation in the world, but he didn't play especially well. And to be able to rebound last week, to be able to get a full game's worth of reps is something that I think will really help. But he's going to have to take care of the football, and he's probably going to end up leaning a lot on that running game.
As you would think. One thing we want to notice, I'm looking at this right now, I haven't looked too deep into it. You guys should check out the dailygophers.com, the Minnesota website, over one of our brethren on SB Nation. They do a thing, it looks like they do every week, something about concept schemes, formations. Something to look at right now with the receiving patterns, what type of part of it's for smart football, if you know Chris Brown, which you should know. They kind of use some of what he does, wrote up, or as kind of a, not drawings, but play designs, I guess. It's kind of like examples. Check that out. Like, they're talking about what they do passing the ball, like they're, what is it here? I just opened it right now, so I'm going to sound kind of dumb just talking about it, but it talks about their passing routes, what they want to do normally of the passing game when they do pass the ball. I wish I would. I'll put it on our website. I'll check out the layout, but they just posted this a little bit ago, so I'm kind of rambling, which sounds pretty terrible and probably not too intelligent, but it goes over kind of what they did past couple weeks, and this could be what they're, if you want to be smarter about what they Gophers may do passing the ball, like with the route tree, and looks like they do a lot of curls and kind of their deeping passing routes. Check that out just because it looks pretty cool, and I will read over it later. Maybe sound smarter if I talk about it again, but that's something interesting to X's and O stuff if you're into that.
Yeah, I mean, another thing I think to watch in this game on Colorado State's defensive side of the ball, to date, you know, despite getting blown out by Colorado, despite playing the really shaky game against, you know, UTSA, the linebacking core for the Rams has played incredibly well so far. I'm just going to throw another one of those advanced metrics out there because, to me, the number really stands out. If you're not familiar with havoc rate on defense, it's basically the percentage of plays in which a defense records a tackle for loss, forced a fumble, or defense to pass. And right now, their linebackers are seventh in the country. And a lot of that falls under Kevin, you know, falls to Kevin Davis, who's had a really good year so far. You know, five tackles for loss, three sacks, two forced fumbles. But even the other guys in that starting lineup, you know, Evan Colorito is quietly having a very good year so far. And if you look further down the tackles for loss, you know, Trey Thomas only has five tackles, but half of them are tackles for loss so far. These guys are probably going to have to play well. You know, they're probably going to have to stop the running game and force Leidner to make plays because this isn't the most explosive offense that they'll face all year. If they can force Leidner to make plays in the passing game, I think that that'll work in their favor.
Yeah, their longest passing play is only 26 yards. And to add on what you said about the havoc rate, do you want to take a gander what Colorado State gives up per rushing play defensively?
I have not seen that, but what is the number?
A nice and tidy 2.84 yards per rushing attempt.
That's pretty good.
That's third in the conference, which is surprisingly not number one. But yeah, so with the running game they'll bring out, that's something to see. Like, that clearly goes with the linebacking core you're talking about and how well they're doing. The havoc rate and tackles for loss, it's all included. Includes sacks, so it's a little deceiving because sacks are included in a rushing game for, or rushing yards for college football. But overall in the country, that's a top 20, top 20 defense for yards per play. And so it could come down to if Minnesota can run the ball better or if the Rams can stop the ball. Because even on the ground game, like Kobe McCrary has 150-yard touchdown run. That's the long, but besides that, they don't have, like you said, they're not like, super explosive on the ground game or even the pass game. They are nearly 5 yards per play rushing, but again, you have 150-yarder and everything else is a couple 20-yard runs. So there's a chance there for the Rams to stop them, perhaps. I don't. Who Minnesota's played? Who have they played so far? I forget. Let's see here. Is that Indiana State, I want to say? INST?
I think so.
And then an Oregon State team, which is not very good. I think the Rams could maybe pull this upset off because 16.5 is way too many points. I know the Rams look terrible versus Colorado, and Minnesota doesn't impress me all that much, even though they've been okay the past couple of years, improved quite a bit from what they used to be. The Rams could win, but it'll take Colin Hill having a big game, and that linebacking core of the front seven stopping the consistent running game that Minnesota has. I think at a minimum, they could cover this game.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I'm leaning, too. I think that they can cover that spread, definitely. But, I mean, you know, traveling east is never an easy task for any team. And, you know, I still have some lingering doubts about Colin Hill's ability to make plays in the passing game. Like, if it comes down to it and they need him to make a play to extend a drive, is he going to be able to do it? I'm not so sure. And
that's a good question.
It may sound like a cop-out, but that's kind of the reason I'm leaning Minnesota in this game.
Well, when he's only played Northern Colorado, when he actually played a team UTSA, he, like you said, what was he, 2 of 8 or something, 2 of 6 against UTSA?
Yeah, I believe so.
Not very, obviously super small sample size, but I don't know, you play Northern Colorado, you should do good. It's good to see him play well and not screw up against an FCS team, but there's a big difference between FCS to even a middle-of-the-pack Big Ten team, so I don't think they'll pull off the win. I wouldn't be overly surprised if they do, but I would, I'm just going with them to cover and maybe 10 point, maybe 2 touchdowns, but something reasonably close. All right, let's move on to the next game. We have we got a lot of early kicks here, noon kicks on the East Coast, fellas. Nevada at Purdue, ESPN News, a lot of ESPN News games I noticed this year. We had Rutgers in New Mexico last week, now this one. Nevada, do they roll a 20-sided die for what offensive scheme they're going to play or run each time?
That's a very good question.
Because they run the triple option, played multiple quarterbacks, and you never see that go well. New Mexico's kind of done it with multiple QBs, or one of my experiences watching Utah when they had no quarterback after Brian Johnson left it. Eric Weddle playing QB a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's a great athlete with the Ravens and Chargers, but it's very few and far between, or even Tim Tebow and Chris Leak in Florida. You don't see it too often where they make these type of changes and it goes well for the team. And at least after last week, it did well, putting in a safety at quarterback, putting in Tyler Stewart. He played majority, but the way their offense is changing and the different players are bringing in, and the funny thing is, we see these teams, you should know what's coming, like the Wildcat, whatever, you bring it, like I said, Tim Tebow, or guys who are going to run the ball, or when they do it with Donald Pumphrey a little bit with San Diego State, or whoever they do back there, they give it to the running back. You should know what's coming. Nevada's kind of done it where the team knows what's coming when they bring in their safety to play quarterback. They know the triple option's coming, but teams still, they're still moving the ball just enough. And so having them do that, it's pretty interesting that they're successful doing that, at least after last week's game.
Yeah, I mean, if they consider sticking with that really run-heavy attack, what I would say is, you know, it's kind of worked out for them more often than it hasn't, you know, because they've averaged about, you know, 4.9 yards carry, which is pretty good. But, you know, some of these, you know, efficiency metrics, going back to success rate, like we talked about a minute ago, if you look at that, they're playing like a top 20 team, being able to move the chains. You know, their success rate is about 48%, which is 19th in the country. And that's really a credit, I think, mostly to James Butler, you know, because he's averaging well over 5 yards a carry. And when you consider that Purdue at the moment is dead last in the Big Ten rushing defense, you know,
it's not very Big Ten of them. Not very Big Ten of them.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're dead last in yards allowed per game on the ground, but they're also next to last in, you know, yards allowed per carry. And I think that's the kind of thing that favors, you know, James Butler and a similar kind of game plan that we saw last week.
Yeah, one thing is, well, look, I guess they're kind of high in the Jackson Kincaid. Like, there's a marine up in the Reno Gazette about a little article on him about what he did last week. And they need, for this offense to be good, he's a smaller guy at 5'9", 180. He came out with 99 yards versus Buffalo. He had no attempts versus Cal Poly, only 2 versus Notre Dame. And he went 18 for 99. And, yes, one was a 48-yarder, but he's still, whatever. If he's the backup and getting 15 carries for 50 yards, that's still fine. For this offense, if they're going to do the triple option, run the pistol, they need a secondary back. And Stewart, the QB, hasn't He's only ran for 67 yards, which is fine after three games, but you need to have a second back, and Kincaid could be that guy to make this option, pistol, whatever they're going to bring in there, their option attack, I'll stick with the basic term there. They need a second back to not do what Butler does, but come closer, stay within 50% of his total yards. So Butler gets 125, Kincaid gets about, what, 60 yards, 60 to 80 yards.
Yeah.
And I know Buffalo's not very good, but like you said, if Purdue's last in Big Ten in yards rushing game, this could be another time for Kincaid to have another, who knows, 60 to 90 yards, and then Butler hopefully gets over 100.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing to watch too, you know, flipping to the other side of the ball, you know, maybe some of it is symptomatic of the teams they've played so far, but Nevada is number one in the conference at the moment in, you know, yards allowed per game through the air. And their, you know, opponent's quarterback rating right now is only 116.53. You know, they've only allowed about 50% of their passes to be completed. They've only given up three touchdowns through the air. And it's going to be really interesting to watch because nobody through two games has thrown more, or only a couple of guys have thrown more than Purdue's David Blough has so far. And he's a guy that, as a sophomore, I think is kind of learning on the job overall. You know, so even though he's throwing the ball a lot, he hasn't always been terribly efficient, you know, because he's only completing 57% of his passes. He's already thrown six interceptions in two games. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those things where he may get a lot of yards against this pass defense, but is it going to be one of those situations where they can shut him down kind of like they did last week against Buffalo? Or is it going to be the kind of defense that really had a hard time stopping Notre Dame's pair of quarterbacks? So that'll be something I would want to see.
I would say easier than Notre Dame, and I think they'll probably avoid Damian Babber back there because he'll probably get a couple picks if they throw his way.
That's probably true.
And with Purdue, they beat Eastern Kentucky and lost to Cincinnati. And so here's the thing. Both these teams aren't supposed to be very good. Somehow Purdue really quick gets a 5.5-point favorite for Purdue, which probably sounds about right. But I don't see too much difference in this team as for where they may be respectively within their conference. And they're probably both going to struggle for a bowl game to get to that 6-win mark. I don't know. It's hard to tell because Buffalo is really bad. And so, and it's a couple of things. You play Cal Poly, triple option team. I've said this before. They'll get yards against any team they play. Shouldn't have been that close, but they'll get the yards of production. Notre Dame, just a much better team. And Buffalo's kind of obviously not nearly as good as Nevada. Obviously, Purdue's between Buffalo and Notre Dame. It's like, but where do you put him in there? I think here's what I think it comes down to. If Jackson Kincaid, the freshman running back, true freshman, by the way, and also a fun note, I was glancing at the article, he was third string as high school team last year.
Mm-hmm.
Was even starting last year. I guess the two running backs ahead of him got FBS scholarships, and they had 13 overall, good FBS team, pretty good for high school's team. And so, if they have him run well, I think I'm going for the win. Nevada for the upset.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the same thing. You know, I mean, Purdue's going to throw the ball. Like, it's not going to be for lack of trying, but I like this secondary's chances of really making him pay for his mistakes the same way that Cincinnati did last week.
Yeah, they don't Drew Brees back there.
And if they can get a short field or two, like if they can start a couple of drives within Purdue territory, I think the running game is good to really make them pay for those kinds of mistakes as well.
Yeah, I think this will be these are like all these games in the morning are all Big Ten, one Big 12 team, but these are all going to be interesting games. The next one is San Jose State at Iowa State. Is there a TV listed for this? Because I'm not seeing it on ESPN.com.
Okay, hold on. I believe
it's probably Fox Sports Net, maybe?
Let me talk for just a second. I will tell you.
Okay, I'll talk about this game for a moment. I'm trying to pull it up as well, but...
Okay, so here's... It's on Fox Sports Net.
So basically, a Fox Sports Regional.
Yeah.
So there's not a Fox Sports in your area, is there? It's Root Sports and Comcast Bay Area, essentially.
I have no idea. I could probably find it one way or another.
No, it's okay. I'm just curious. So you'll have to search for this game. That's all we're saying. So I apologize for that. But maybe if you have a betting, if you get Fox Sports 1 on your cable network or satellite, I'm pretty sure you might be able to go to Fox Sports Go, their streaming service, and find it there. But just check your local listing. That's all we can say here for this game. Iowa State is somehow a touchdown favorite despite being 0-3.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me because, you know, like, what is it that you think of when you think of the Big 12?
Expansion.
Okay, as far as on-field products, let's put it that way.
Oklahoma. Like
you think of, like, lots of offense, right?
Yeah, offense, yes.
Okay, so Kansas, right, as far as yards per play, Kansas averages almost a yard and a half more per play than Iowa State does on offense.
Oh, geez.
It's a work in progress. Like, you know, Matt Campbell's in his first year there in Ames, and so far just hasn't been very pretty. You know, they got kind of dismantled last week against Iowa, if I'm not mistaken.
Two weeks ago, 42-3. 2 weeks. And El Clasico.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so last week it was TCU. But, you know, they weren't necessarily competitive on either side of the ball in those games. You know, they're only eighth in the conference in total defense, too.
There's only 10 teams in that conference also.
Yes, and I mean, they're giving up 5.7 yards a play on defense as well. And I think that, you know, for a team with as many struggles in the running game as San Jose State has had early in the season, like, this is a chance to really get healthy and reestablish that the same way that they did against Portland State a couple weeks ago.
Also, side note, Iowa State lost to Northern Iowa week one.
Ouch. That's not good.
No, and they're a touchdown favorite over a team, which, when I watched them play Utah last week, that first quarter surprised the heck out of me because they moved. I know Kenny Potter didn't have that many yards, and Ron Carragher, I should double check, but he should be back this week after his injury. I think more of a confidence thing as well with the dozen sacks almost they had. But the rush defense played well in the first quarter. They moved the ball in the first quarter. Utah just had more talent and better. But if San Jose State plays like they did in the first quarter against Utah, they should probably easily beat Iowa State.
Or at least, you know, at a minimum, they should make it competitive. Because, I mean, if you're worried about, you know, something like Utah State's defensive line, Iowa State doesn't have it. You know, they've only racked up 5 sacks in 3 games. So the Spartans should have a little easier time keeping Potter or Love or whoever happens to be behind the center upright. You know what I mean? But, you know, even beyond that, they haven't really been able to, you know, assert themselves in general on defense. I'm trying to look at their tackles for loss number. And they've really only racked up 19 tackles for loss, which among the teams that have played 3 games in the Big 12 is next to last. So Potter should have time to throw, you know, if they can find big plays against this defense.
Get it to Billy Freeman. Come on.
Well, yeah, get it to Billy Freeman. Get it to Tim Crawley. Absolutely.
They wish they probably had Tyler Winston as well. That doesn't help this year. I'm trying to see, looking at Iowa State, I'm checking. We should probably do some more pre-show research, but QB situation isn't ideal. I'm trying to see. I believe it's Joel. I'm going to double-check. They played 2 guys so far. Joel Lanning, majority of the reps. They got Jacob Park. Lanning has 3 TDs. Park has 0. Park completing well under 50%. Joel Lanning, just above 50%. Should we talk to about this? Our buddy, our old buddy Matthew Bain does stuff in Iowa now. I should probably see what he's up to about this game. Or Iowa State, because I think he does Iowa State. Maybe Iowa, but regardless, we've said it before, and it's still kind of true. San Jose State's secondary is pretty good.
They are pretty good.
Iowa State's passing game is not very good.
It does leave something to be desired. Like, they have 2 guys.
You're too nice. Come on. You're too nice.
I mean, they have 2 guys who have shown some ability to make plays so far. Like, their leading receiver, Alan Lazar, is averaging almost 18 yards a catch. And their second leading receiver is a guy who has a catch rate well over 60%. So that's something, you know, for Iowa State fans to keep an eye on, for San Jose State fans to keep an eye on. But, you know, again, I think that, like you said, San Jose State's secondaries is still a strength. You know, Andre Chachere's had a pretty good year so far with a couple picks. for pass breakups. And this seems to me like the kind of game where, you know, the Spartans can win on defense if their stars get a really good effort against this offensive line and against this passing game. Like, if Chachere can pick up a, you know, an interception, if, you know, someone like Frank Ginda can rack up a couple tackles for loss and a sack, if, you know, somebody or other can force a fumble, which I think they should be able to, that's should be the road to a win, I think, in this game.
Two things. Joel Lanning, starting quarterback. I just double-checked your depth chart. But I would not be surprised if Jacob, what's his name, Park hops in because he's played the last two games.
Mm-hmm.
But also, do we know, is Christian Tago even back? Or do you know what's going on with him at all?
I have not seen or heard anything.
Again, I wish somebody actually is able to cover the team that in that town, because that would be nice. Let me check really quick here. But the running game, it's always still a concern because Utah, after that first quarter, Utah bust out some big runs and moved the ball, and Iowa State doesn't have a good rushing attack. Mike Warren is their leading rusher at 3.6 yards an attempt, and overall they're under jeez. San Jose State honestly should win this game. Because Iowa State less than 3 yards per attempt rushing, and then do you want to take a guess what their longest rush play is?
12.
Close, 14.
Oh, I wasn't that up for that.
You were not. They like to go deep passing, but rushing leaves a lot to be desired. I think Iowa State will be successful a little bit just because San Jose State's rush defense is just unfortunately not that good. Also, really quick, Kenny Potter is listed as a starter, and then Christian Tago. I do not. Let me do a quick Command F on my good old computer here, but it looks like he's not even listed on the depth chart.
I mean, I think regardless, I still like San Jose State in this game.
They're going to win again, you think?
I think they will.
I'll go with it because I think Big Ten's Big 12 is terrible, especially Iowa State. So
we're sick of talking about the Big 12.
Like I said, expansion. Get over with it. Boise State at Oregon State. A rare. These are all early games, folks. So majority of these are during the day and the morning. If you're going to record some games or flip back and forth, good time to do it. Good time to, well, I would say bust out your ESPN app. I guess for two of the games you can. But next game, also early. Boise State plays in the sunlight. That's not very often that happens.
Yeah, Fox Sports.
Fox Sports 1 at Oregon State, who's still not very good. It's a 12:30 Pacific time there, 1:30 for those in Boise. Let's play Guess the Line. Do you want to know what the line is for this game?
I'm going to say Boise minus 6.5.
Oh, double that almost. 13.5.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm way off on. I'm bad at this game.
That's okay. No, no worries. Minnesota beat Oregon State. That's all you need to know, really.
Ouch.
And Idaho State, who Oregon State played last week, the Beavers only won 37-7.
Interesting.
And didn't... no, that was last year when UNLV put up 80 points. That was last year. A name that a lot of people will remember, Daryl Gerritsen, former Utah State quarterback, is starting for Oregon State finally. He's not doing that great. He has in two games only 400 yards passing, barely completing 57%, and 3 TDs, 1 interception, which is fine after two games. Their passing game goes to a million. What do they have? A dozen guys who caught a pass. Rushing game's not too bad, but Ryan Nail has 110 yards as their main rusher, but I don't know. They have a 92-yard run, which skews everything after two games for their average play rushing attack. And that was done by wide receiver Victor Bolden Jr., so he's a guy who can make some plays that way if they want to mix in a little, not trickery, but just kind of jet sweep or whatever they do running the ball. But I don't trust Oregon State to do much of anything because I'm sorry, Gary Anderson, he took over that job after going to Wisconsin for a year?
Yes.
Yeah, him and Mike Riley switched spots. I know he's a West Coast guy because I believe he started coaching at Southern Utah, went to University of Utah as a DC. We all know what he did at Utah State, took a big job at Wisconsin, then moved to Oregon State, which is clearly a step down, brought in all of his Utah State buddies to coach. Chucky Keaton's on staff there, as are others from Logan. But he did lose a couple things. He did lose his DC, who's now head coach at BYU, and his linebacker coach, Elisa Tuiaki, who's also at BYU now. So he has a new defensive staff a little bit, but nothing points to me that Oregon State should win this game.
I mean, I think you're right. You know, one thing I will point out, though, you know, obvious
dig for those positives. Dig for that.
Okay, so, you know, obvious caveats here because they played Minnesota and they played Idaho State, FCS team, right? Wow. But their pass defense in both of those games has been really good so far. Like, you know, they picked off Idaho State four times and they held Mitch Leidner, you know, no touchdowns, no interceptions. But they held him under 5 yards an attempt, which I think is something worth noting.
It's pretty good.
And the only reason I mention that is because, you know, Brett Rypien, for as good as he's been overall, still has those instances where he kind of blows up every so often, right? And so I went back. I looked over his numbers, you know, last year versus what he's done this year so far. Generally speaking, he's actually been a little bit better on the road in pretty much every measure you look at. You know, completion percentage, yards per attempt, quarterback rating, things like that. So while you would think that, you know, he should be able to pass all over this defense, you know, if they're going to slow him down, I think that that's the way they're going to do it. Because I think they should be able to kind of run the ball and keep, you know, build a comfortable lead and keep it. But I think that, you know, if Brett Rypien makes a mistake or two, this pass defense may be able to do something with it.
Okay, because Gary Anderson's a great defensive coach.
Yes.
And so he'll find, and he's familiar with a little bit what Boise does. A few of the guys are still, well, that's been a while, but he's kind of familiar with the Boise scheme essentially. And while Oregon State offense looks to be still a work in progress, maybe Daryl Garrett should be better going forward, which he should. You are correct, like, they should be able to have some success defensively, but like last year, you look at the numbers, and you've discussed this a ton, in the offseason especially, when Rypien had a bad game, they lose. Last week, he had a bad game, and they won. And so, there's other players on the team that'll help him, but I think if Oregon State's going to get in this game, they're going to have to, it's stupid cliches, win the turnover margin, sack the QB, cause disruption, but I think that could be done for maybe half a game, but not completely. I don't think Oregon State can keep up because Boise will find ways to score.
That's true. I mean, not only that, but they'll find ways, I think, to make big plays, which Oregon State hasn't really allowed so far. Like, I don't even think they've allowed a play of you know, more than 30 yards to this point. But I think that, you know, Boise has enough playmakers on the outside, guys like Spurbeck and Anderson on the outside, that, you know, they should find holes in this defense in a way that Minnesota and Idaho State weren't able to.
So let me ask you this. What's the over-under on pass attempts for Thomas Spurbeck?
Pass attempts for Spurbeck?
Yeah. He throws quite a bit.
2.
Okay.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think this is a game that Boise State should win pretty comfortably.
I agree with you. Let's go into the next game. We're moving on to the afternoon a little bit. Next game got bumped for a Garth Brooks concert coming to town?
It is several Garth Brooks concerts coming to town.
How many Garth Brooks concerts are coming to Fresno?
Last I checked, like, he announced one, and then, like, he announced a second one, and then he announced, like, 2 more. So he's having 4 different shows over 3 days, I think.
Is that the Save Mart Arena?
Save Mart Center, yes.
Or Save Mart Center, excuse me. Yeah, he came to Salt Lake, I think, last summer, sold out the Home of the Jazz, 4 shows. So it's almost 100,000 people.
Yeah, that's impressive.
I didn't know. Do you like that type of music?
No.
I'm just asking. Neither do I, but...
I'm good.
I'm just saying, like, his popularity surprises me.
It does.
I know he's a big deal, but it's been a long time since... At least I think it's been a long time since he's actually released anything.
People like the hits, I guess.
Apparently, it's like Rolling Stones are still going around, but you don't see them doing 4 shows in 2 nights.
That's very true.
So, this game got bumped. It's not on CBS Sports Network anymore. It's moved to Campus Insiders. Oh, the team they're playing is Tulsa, coming to town with Philip Montgomery there as a second-year head coach. And we'll play the game again since you're terrible so we can maybe chuckle at you. What do you think the line is on this game?
Okay, I'm going to... No, wait, no, actually, I know this one because I looked it up on Sunday. Last I saw, the line had moved to Tulsa -13.
Close enough, 14.5 right now.
So it's moved even more.
Yeah. So
that does not surprise me in the least.
So we know it's going to be there's no word on new quarterback situation, is there, in town? Is it still Chase and Virgil?
It's Chase and Virgil until further notice.
Zach Klein's got in just because it got out of hand last week, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, that's not to say that people aren't clamoring to see more of Zach Klein, but I think doing that at this point is pretty much committing career suicide for Tim DeRuiter.
Yeah, because Zach Klein's a fifth-year transfer, and Chase and Virgil has years ahead of him, assuming he stays in town.
Yeah.
Tulsa, we know they can score points. We saw what they did against San Jose State. They had that stretch of, what, a quarter and a half where they took advantage of turnovers to score points. Versus Ohio State, not so much. But then they play North Carolina AT&T? Whatever. FCS team of some sort. The full name, let's see if I'm correct because I want to know now. Yeah, North Carolina A&T Aggies. Here's what you need to know. Tulsa likes to pass the ball and pass it a lot, folks. It's basically the same old Tulsa you saw when... Who was their coach before? I know they had Gus Malzahn as an OC. I should know that. Who was the coach prior to Philip Montgomery?
Wasn't it Steve Crack, though?
No, Bill, I don't think so. Say that again?
Bill Blankenship?
Yes, Bill Blankenship. Basically, if you've seen Tulsa the past decade, it's basically the same old Tulsa. Not that it's a bad, not that that's a bad thing, but it's what they do, passing the ball. Or if you watch Baylor with RG3 and Art Briles the past couple years, it's that type of offense they run. A lot of passing, shotgun, multiple wide receiver sets. They will run the ball because they do actually have a running game, even though when you think of these passing teams. But Fresno's defense has to do something. Dane Evans, he's a really good QB. Yeah, he has five picks, but I believe most of those were versus Ohio State. But the offense is more well-rounded than you think with D'Angelo Brewer and James Flanders running the ball.
Yeah, I mean, if you take out the Ohio State game, he's, you know, in the two home games that he's played, he's basically been the same quarterback that he was last year. You know, in those two home games, he averaged over 9 yards an attempt, and he had four touchdowns to just one interception. So I think overall, you could probably throw the Buckeyes game out the window. And because this is a team that passes and passes and then maybe runs occasionally and then passes some more, this is a bad matchup for the Bulldogs because, you know, you might have said, oh, maybe the pass defense has taken a step forward from last year to this year. If you watched last week's game, they got exposed by Logan Woodside a lot more than they did in the first two games against Nebraska and Sacramento State.
So and who's better, Woodside or Tulsa QB Dane Evans?
I mean, I think at this point, I would probably without having seen a lot of Evans, you know, Woodside might be the best quarterback in the MAC right now. Mm-hmm. And you know, Dean Evans is having a little bit of an inconsistent year, so right now I'd give the nod to Woodside, but I think Evans is more than enough to be the kind of QB that racks up like 350 yards and four touchdowns against this pass defense because the defensive line just hasn't been up to snuff. They haven't been able to get enough pressure on him. And while I like the linebackers overall, they just haven't been able to get to the quarterback enough so far this year. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on guys like James Bailey, Brandon Hughes, Tabena Okeke, those, you know, pass rushers on the outside that are really, they're supposed to get to the quarterback and they just haven't been. And I think that if they give Evans time to throw, you know, he's got, you know, two or three different targets that can make him pay down the field.
All right, so Tulsa, they they've given up. This might be a game where Fresno could get to the QB because they've given up 9 sacks this year.
That's true, but then again, how many of those were against Ohio State?
That's what I'm trying to check right now. I'm trying to go to the game log. I know Evans has been sacked 7 times himself.
Mm-hmm.
Dang it, I thought. I need to adjust this. Sorry, I'm looking at CFB stats. I thought they had a game log of sacks. Maybe they don't.
So, I mean, maybe there's a little bit of skewing going on, but...
Okay, here we go. Only 2 sacks allowed versus Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
That means... and then there's 1 versus East Carolina. Or not East Carolina, but North Carolina AT&T. It looks like... Did San Jose State really sack him 5 times?
They might have. I mean, I don't know, man. I have my doubts about this defense.
I'm just saying, it looks like there's this more opportunities than you would think, possibly.
Yeah, and I mean, if the running game is a little more sound than it was last year, like if this Tulsa offense can manage to be balanced, you know, this is the kind of defense that, you know, last week showed you can wear them down and really run away with things late. And if that happens again, you know, this is a game that could get out of hand, what, midway through the third quarter or something like that.
So what does the Fresno offense need to do? Because Tulsa, it's hard. Their defenses do it done pretty well. Well, never mind. Ohio State notwithstanding too much. But would you say Fresno's offense is better than San Jose State's offense?
It's hard to say because I think a lot of it, the more I've watched this team, the offensive line just has to play better. Because if you go back and look at last week's game, there was more than one instance where Virgil was just forced off his spot continually, and they flushed him to the sideline, and there was nothing for him to do but really just throw it away. And, you know, while Tulsa's, you know, defensive line may not light the world on fire, you know, they're only middle of the pack in the American in tackles for loss, and they've only racked up, you know, 7 sacks so far through 3 games. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Toledo had a pretty good pass defense, and they just straight up abused this offensive line. So if Tulsa can do something similar, it's going to be a long afternoon for Virgil.
I think, unfortunately, I think this might be a huge blowout for Tulsa. Because
you might be right.
Not to speed down or anything, but my thanks for the message. I really, we're talking too much, but my point is that Fresno, Tulsa does something really, really good at throwing the ball. Fresno State doesn't have something really good. And I'm thinking Tulsa is better than Toledo.
See, I would have, I would not, I would probably argue that because I think Toledo is one of the best teams in the group of 5, period.
Yeah.
But I think Tulsa's offense is enough to really put this game out of reach early.
I think the score could be the same.
I mean, if they go up 14-0 and it's like midway through the first quarter or late in the first quarter and they can't find an answer on offense, like how is this team going to respond? How is the fan base going to respond? And, you know, if the game gets out of hand, like how is the community going to respond to another blowout loss? Because that's kind of how I see this game going.
Like, I think too.
So it's probably going to win by like 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, I think the score could be similar. Hopefully not, but 4 touchdowns. 20 to 30 points. So I know we're going to probably discuss this again, but if it's a blowout loss, is the same head coach next week?
My first inclination is to say yes, but I know a lot of people would not be happy about it.
Okay. Final game. Hopefully this is under an hour. Oh, wait. Dang it, my favorite thing got me again. Idaho at UNLV. Do we have to talk about this game? It's Idaho and UNLV.
Talk very briefly about it.
We should.
Let's put it this way. What do you want to see from the Rebels in this game?
A dominant victory against an FBS team.
And what do you think the key to that is?
Well, I want to see Johnny Stanton actually take a step forward in throwing the ball well and moving the ball well offensively. I know the receivers have issues, but I guess the depth-wise, not the receivers themselves, but the injuries are a concern. But you're playing an Idaho team who lost to Washington State 56-6. And Washington 59-14. I know Washington State has offense, but they're not amazing this year is what they have, even with Luke Falk throwing the ball. I want to see Stanton just – it's a home game, and to have him have a big game because they say he has this huge arm. He came in from the JUCO ranks, going to be great. He's only completed 44% of his passes. Running game is fine. I remember when we talked to Chris, he's like, it'll be Lexington Thomas. He's the guy. I'm like, okay, Chris, whatever. We'll see it later. He's proven me wrong. He's doing well. But I want to see the passing game now. Devontae Boyd's fine. They need to get other guys involved. Like, they're passing the ball around a little bit, but I want to see Stanton complete 65% of his passes.
That's fair. I think what I want to see is I want to see the secondary keep making plays because, you know, all things considered, I think that they've probably been the best part of the entire team as a whole. Which you might not have said going into the season, but, you know, if you look at some of their numbers, Troy Hawthorne has already forced 2 fumbles, has 2 tackles for loss, has an interception and a pass breakup. He's had a pretty good year so far, you know, at the safety position. Torrey McTyre has 4 pass breakups. Darius Mouton has 4 pass breakups. And against an Idaho passing offense that doesn't really light the world on fire at all, you know, Matt Linehan's only completing about 55% of his passes. And it's not a terribly explosive passing offense that the Vandals have. You know, I want to see them make plays. I want to see them give Stanton a short field that he can do something with, especially because this offense is still growing and they still have a lot of young parts to it. You know, Lexington Thomas, is for as good as he is only a sophomore, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, I want to see him have another big game, and I want to see these freshmen take another step forward. Darren Woods, Mekki Stevenson, and whoever happens.
The whole receiving core, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much the whole receiving core. I want to see them have a big game.
I also want to see a complete game, because I know Central Michigan and playing these teams like UCLA.
Yeah.
They're better. Central Michigan kind of surprised me. They only got outscored 16 in the second half, but UCLA got they had the second quarter and a couple TDs late that were pretty big. I want to see a complete game where there's no lapse where, say, Idaho scores off two touchdowns in a row, or there's a big drought offensively, or just where UNLV disappears. But let's play our favorite game. What's the who's favorite in this game?
Let's say UNLV by like 10.
Close. Two touchdowns. Close enough. Okay. This is
UNLV to cover that.
Yeah, they. You think they will?
I think they will.
I believe they will as well. It's a Mountain West Network, 6 Pacific time. But now, finally, after waddling through the whole day, the game of the week, clearly, first conference game of the year on ESPNU, so no bonus there, which sucks. Air Force, 2-0, at 2-1, Utah State Aggies.
It's going to be a good game.
Let's get this out of the way. Who's favored in this game?
I'm going to say Air Force by 6.
Ooh, not quite. Air Force by 3.
Okay. All
still
right.
A little surprising that they're a road favorite. Just because a little bit surprised, because playing at Logan's not terribly easy. But here's the thing, like you and me mentioned this before, if Air Force wins this game, they have a pretty good chance to be 11-0 when they face Boise State end of the year. Navy's a little tricky. Army's actually playing well. They're undefeated at 3-0. But I don't trust Army at the moment, really. But what do we know about Air Force, though? They beat Abilene Christian and a bad Georgia State team.
Yeah, well, I mean, we know that the defense, at a minimum, is really, really good. And, you know, if Utah State wants to have a chance in this game, they're kind of going to need to do what they did last week in their win against Arkansas State. They're going to need to, you know, make a couple plays on defense, and they're going to have to lean on their running game, I think. You know, whether or not Devontae Mays is back, at least now they know that they have a guy behind him in Tawny Lindsay who can kind of step up and lead the charge. And they're going to need Kent Myers, I think, to rebound from the kind of game he had last week, because, you know, overall on the year, I think he's been okay. But, you know, this secondary that Air Force has is probably still the best in the conference overall. You know, between, it's, you know, coin flip between them and San Diego State. But, you know, we haven't seen whether Utah State's receiving core, you know, whether it's Wyatt Houston or Rashad Lewis or Andrew Rodriguez, we haven't seen them make big plays. And if Air Force can limit Kent Myers like that, and they can force them to run the ball, I think they're good enough to shut that down, and they're good enough to really put this game away if Utah State just can't move the ball.
One thing, yeah, you're correct, because one thing I was trying to look up right now, some guy emailed me some stuff about this game, listened to our show, so I appreciate everybody who listens, but there's two conflicting things for me about this game, because we like Kent Myers, but like, our guy, Ben Phillips, who does some Utah State for us, says, I get it, it's Kent Myers' job, he's doing well, but he's not doing really all that well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
he's doing well enough.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of that is skewed by the USC game, just because they really put a lot on his shoulders because the Trojans were able to shut down the running game.
Well, but Arkansas State, only 11 of 25.
That's also true, and that's why I'm saying, you know, he is going to have to be the guy that, you know, well, it's not all on him, though, because his receivers are going to have to do something.
Well, true, but you would expect Arkansas State, he would do better. It's just, you would think, I get the USC game. Here's the thing, he went 2/3 of his passes completed versus Utah State, or excuse me, USC. He had a downfield pass of 43 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. Arkansas State, you'd figured, come on, you got to go 18 for 25 minimum.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely right about that. I mean,
and half of his yards was on one play last week.
Yeah, I mean, they just haven't been able to find the big play on offense. Like, if you're breaking down by, like, long passing plays, this game is a matchup between the two teams in the conference who have the fewest passing plays of more than 10 yards, which, you know, you might expect Air Force to be in that conversation. They have only 8 so far on the season in 2 games, but Utah State only has 15 in 3 games. And, you know, like I said, if they can't, you know, if they can't crack the coverage that Air Force is going to throw at them, you know, this defense, you know, Weston Steelhammer, Roland Ladipo, all the guys that they have back there are good enough to really shut them down.
So what's your, like, why would it, let me ask you this, and why would Air Force win this game? Is it because of that defense, or would it be because their rushing attack?
Well, I mean, I think between the two of those, I think it would be because their defense gives their running attack opportunities with a short field.
Okay, so how... No, it does. It's just they're a more balanced team than they have been before. I don't know who's going to win. It's going to be a tough one. Like, we've seen the Utah State up front seven, especially the linebacking group, is stepped up fine. And, like, Air Force with this offense will still get... They'll always get it. They'll get their yards, option, triple option, doing the type of scheme they do. I just think Utah State, it's like anytime you play this Air Force team, limit the big plays what they do on the ground.
Yeah, and I mean,
they don't get beat deep also when they do the play action. That's like the two biggest things against this team.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the numbers in Air Force's run defense especially, like, they're only giving up 2.5 yards per carry. But like you said, that's mostly, I think, because they played Abilene Christian and Georgia State.
Yeah.
So this is the best running attack that they will have faced so far. So, you know, if it's Mays or if it's Lindsay or if it's, you know, further down the depth chart, someone like Justin Herbie getting like 10, 12 carries, you know, if they can move the chains, you know, that I think is the way that they give themselves a chance to win this game.
They do, and I'm checking if Devontae, I should check before as we're discussing, but if Devontae Mays, if he's going to be back in this game, because he dressed and was ready to go last week, but he did not. I thought he'd see action. Some guys said he might be starting because they're warming up with that unit. But let's see here. I'm trying to see what he said about their during the press conference. But I think if Utah State's going to win, they have to have Devontae Mays healthy back there. If they use the two running backs. Yeah, it looks like Devontae Mays is listed as a starter. I'm thinking, I think I mentioned this last week, that if it was a closer game versus Arkansas State, you would have seen Mays in there. But with them taking care of business and being mostly in control, like, we'll rest him. We got a short week with Air Force coming to town. So I'm thinking if he's back and healthy all the way, that's the way Utah State could win. But overall, I think Air Force is going to take care of business on the road.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to Football Study Hall and you look at, you know, Air Force's kind of advanced stat profile, this is the one game between now and their finale against Boise State where they have the lowest win probability.
What is that right now?
For Air Force, it's 44%.
In this game?
Yes. But I'm with you. I think it'll be...
Wait. So they're saying Utah State should win this game?
They have Utah State at 56% to win, yeah.
Interesting.
But... Sorry, Aggies fans. I'm with you, Jeremy. I think it'll be closely contested, but I like Air Force to really, you know, maybe it's a back and forth game, but I like them to win by about a touchdown.
Yeah, it'll be something close. So this is the game. If you could watch any game this week, you have to watch this one. It's later at night in the evening, so if you're having stuff during the day, take care of that stuff. Eat, have a late dinner. I don't know. Just find a way to watch this game, even if you have to record it, then watch it later at night if you're going out late. Watch this game because it's a night game. It's weather's going to be great. Low 60s for an evening game, but either team could win. I just don't trust Utah State yet because, again, Mays is injured a little bit. Air Force has one of their better defense probably since your head coach Tim Drueter was in town. running the defense there.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm thinking. And Air Force has more experience. And Kent Myers has been not as well as we thought he would be.
They're going to have to show me something in the passing game.
Yeah, that me too. I think the offense, you're right, the offense against the Air Force secondary is going to be the big key matchup. If Utah State's going to win, they need to have success there. But yeah, Aggies are unfortunately going to drop to 2-2. Air Force will be 3-0. And that's our show almost, right? Is that it? Is that all we got?
That is all we got.
One actually, I do have one piece of news. I thought New Mexico was playing this week, so much for me paying attention as much as I should. But there's injury news. We probably should discuss this earlier on. But Austin Apodaca, the QB for New Mexico, they feared he'd have like a out for the year fractured collarbone. Looks like he had a X-ray. Didn't show a complete fracture. So basically, he won't need surgery to repair a partially fractured collarbone. So it's Lamar Jordan the rest of the way, and Bob Davey asked about two quarterbacks. Nope, going to be just Lamar Jordan, so it's a Lamar Jordan show for New Mexico going forward for a while.
Be ready, Broncos fans.
Not a bad thing, because he actually threw the ball reasonably well, better than he has. So is that game next week?
It is next Friday. We will talk about it then.
Oh, man. Can't wait for that one. Maybe see if we have Chris Knopf on, because I think he would enjoy discussing that game.
Actually, it's 2 weeks away. I'm sorry.
Well, I'll give him an early heads up on that too.
They're going to need that much time to prepare mentally for the triple option.
Ooh, shots fired.
That's my excuse.
Is that why Nevada installed the triple option?
Who knows?
Who knows what they're doing? But it worked last week, so that's our show for tonight. Again, check us out mwcconnection.com. That's our little website. iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blog Talk Radio. Give us a review, please. I need to check. I don't know if we actually had a review in the past 2 weeks. We could have had a dozen. I just don't notice it. But I will check it out there. Check out our stuff. We'll have a lot more week 3 stuff coming up by the time this is out. And, yeah, have a good weekend. Wake up early for Saturday and get ready to roll for some good games. And we'll see you guys next time.